Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Now, this doesn't change the outcome of any of our particular focal points of our past. However, there have been
I would hope not.
There have been some recent news in the Final Fantasy 14 sphere that has been brought to our attention through our Discord. Thank you so much to user Dr. Mesa for saying that one of our predictions from last year's Dawn Trail prediction has finally come true.
Was it one of mine?
It was, in fact, one of yours.
Oh, fuck yes.
This is an article from Game Rant written by Eric Law, published on the 17th of July of this year. So a year after Dawn Trail came out. Final Fantasy 14 players threatened boycott over new patch point 7.3 gear. So there is a... One of your predictions, I believe, was that one of the dungeon sets or armor sets was going to be culturally insensitive.
Oh, yeah.
That has now come true because the latest dungeon introduced in patch 7.3 has gear inspired by Spanish conquistadors.
Boy, that's the opposite direction from what I was expecting. But...
They brought the conquistadors to the New World. They've got the hats, oof, with the wide brim hats with the feathers. They've got the big bucket helmets, armors, and stuff.
Oh, so it's not even just like the one sort of like shipboard person.
It's it's not just the musketeers. It's like the real conquistadors.
Boy. Yeah, kind of the opposite direction from what I was expecting, but you know, I'll take it. Like,
that even
seems
if that
ill-advised.
Even if that came true, if I remember correctly, you were behind 1.5 and not just one, but still.
Yeah.
I thought you would like to know that your prediction eventually came true.
Whatever, I made us do Medieval May. I feel like I snuck my win in anyway.
Yeah, you made us to do way more games than I did. And my game ruled. Oh my god. We head undercover to Paseo High School and investigate the murder of a little shitlord in Nancy Drew Secrets Can Kill.
Then in the back half of our show, we'll be doing a deep review of the three different camera lenses I'm considering purchasing.
We're going to go over granular, two, fisheye, three, jellyfish.
Okay, look, there's a good like 15-200mm one, but like the f-stop starts at 4 and goes as high as 5.6.
Okay.
And I'm like, should I do that? Should I get something down?
I faded out at this point. I faded out so much. Grape Orange Cool will set the alarm off in the school. Welcome to Light Gaming. This is the lighthearted video game podcast about light video games. Games you can digest in a week, probably, or figure out, you know, the drill. We're just doing things. We're playing the games we want to play, and most of them, we just want to do an episode on in a week. Hi, I'm your host of Light Gaming, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my spectacular, Spencerific, and Spenny.
Of our many friends, I don't think I'm the Spencerific one.
Of Light, Alexander Hambrog, say hello.
Hi, hello, good evening.
Today we are covering Her Interactive's remastered version of the very first Nancy Drew game, the winner of our Nancy Drew bracket, which ruled ass, by the way. Go listen to the episode two episodes ago where we did that. That was super fun. Nancy Drew Secrets Can Kill. Oh my gosh, and what a journey we took to get here. We, if you guys haven't noticed already, the audio quality doesn't suck quite as bad.
We've moved into a room that's much smaller and it has carpet.
It does. If you were a fan of the cathedral, what? Tell me why. That's gone now. Also, my cat can't be quite so distracting. And hopefully we hear fewer motorcycles.
Maybe it makes our show sound too professional. Maybe they really enjoyed kind of the scrappy, low-budget effect that you got from the everything we said bouncing off the walls.
It was bouncing off the God, it was bouncing off the walls, the glass, and the floor, and the everything. It was the worst space to record impossible. Now, in this room, we might hear our neighbors drilling. You don't live here. My neighbor's drilling a little bit. I'm probably not going to bother cutting us for that.
Do they do that regularly?
Weirdly, yes. I don't know what they're doing. I know they live in that unit, but whatever, man. Oh, man.
They're hanging up all their sex furniture.
Their sex swing furniture. Man, remember when Zillow Gone Wild was good?
Yeah.
God, that account used to be so good, and now it's just not, and I can't explain it. Surely there's still shitty Zillow blue postings.
They are, but they're not nearly as fun and weird anymore. Now they're all just like, look at this weird big mansion decorated by this tacky person who...
Better people are doing it on purpose. And they're like trying to get on Zillow God and Wild for more listings. And
oh,
like,
sure, that too, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that doesn't quite work.
Wait, well, actually, no, I don't get that. You're saying they're renovating their homes?
No, they'll put the realtor will just like take pictures and then they'll be in a fucking eagle costume peering out from behind.
Oh, that's dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, like that's probably funny if you organically discover it, but not if you're not on the Zillow God and Wild page. It's like, yeah. Oh, well. Nothing will beat the potato shed.
Boy, hey, you know what building deserves to be on Zillow Gone Wild?
The White House?
This high school.
Oh, this fucking high school as well. Tell us more details about Nancy Drew's Secrets Can Kill.
So this is the first in the Nancy Drew video game series by Her Interactive, originally released in 1998. And we actually played the remake, which came out in 2010, at the same time that sales of the original were discontinued. Now, I had been under the impression that possibly the original was discontinued for some kind of compatibility reason. It's an old piece of software. Maybe it doesn't run super well on new PCs. They just wanted to get like a new version out there rather than do troubleshooting.
Is that not the case?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh.
I actually, we'll get to it. We're going to talk about the ending of this game, which is different in the original from the remake.
Oh? Oh, but I'm so intrigued.
There's a moment that I watched on a YouTube video and went, oh, that's why they don't sell this game anymore.
Oh my God. Well, this is Her Interactive's first game, as you said. If you remember, this was the reason we won this was that we decided that this game was going to be the most unusual of the two that we played. And I am no longer doubting that decision after having played it. This game is buck wild.
The template's all here, right? It's like you have some NPCs scattered around. They have dialogue trees. You have some puzzles that mostly amount to finding items and putting keys in them. Like the skeleton's all here. It's the same franchise they go on to make like 25 more of.
Nancy Drew is right off the bat, we're introduced, not even introduced, where the lore is dropped on us that Nancy Drew's Aunt Eloise is a teacher at Paseo, no, a librarian at Paseo High School in Florida. And Nancy is called by a stranger by a cop to go undercover to investigate the murder of one of the teens that was there. And the first thing you do in this game is you're just in your aunt's nice foyer. Your aunt never shows up in this fucking game.
And also you can explore two rooms of her house.
Yeah, you can explore only two. There's a hallway that goes back there, but Nancy does not know how to go down that hallway.
There's a foyer and a living room. And it took me a while to find the living room because it's not intuitive to locate it.
Yeah, but the first thing you do is you scoop behind this tapestry and find you find a safe, and right off the bat you can get your death out of the way, because the first death in this game is if you enter the wrong combination on that safe too many times, a cage drops in your house that I guess Nancy's not aware of. It's like this cage drops out of nowhere that Nancy cannot get out of, and she starves to death because your aunt is out of town for the week.
Can you imagine that home renovation? Yes, up here on the second floor, we're going to wall off 4 square feet in the middle of the floor, and that's going to be where the cage lives. And then anytime anyone tries to break into my safe, the cage will plunge from the walled off section and land on the intruder.
Oh, and also we're going to need to make a cubby for my safe behind this tapestry.
Make sure the safe has Greek letters on the pad. We're not doing this number shit.
Right. But the and the cage has to have padding on the underneath. I don't want it scratching up my hardwood floors when it drops down.
It's not like there's like wads of cash in there. It's a couple of books and
a sliding puzzle.
I have in my notes here, time to sliding puzzle, 1:26. Just like which interestingly, okay, the art on the sliding puzzle is different from the original game with some weird floral pattern. It appears to be a book cover from like an old Nancy Drew book, but it's not it's in the style of the old ones from the old Yellow Spine Nancy Drew books, but it's not actually from any of them. I scrolled through the whole collection. I didn't see it. So I don't know where this art is from.
It's just fanon, I guess. This game, so this is just sort of emblematic of this game, is that it kind of doesn't pull any punches.
Nope.
Compared to the rest of the Nancy Drew games, after you narrowly avert death in your own aunt's house, you make it to there's two other locations where you are meeting up with your cop, who is feigning the worst undercover story of being your uncle when you're in town visiting your aunt.
Hi, ever. Nancy, my niece. It's good to see you.
He sounds like us doing our ads. Like when we didn't bother writing anything down. Hint, hint. And then we head to the school in which we meet up with, like, the only three students at the school that matter.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like, is it spring break or something? No one's there. Classes.
There's no principal's office. There's no nurse's office. There's no nothing else.
In fact, I don't think you go inside a classroom any time in this entire game.
You do not. There's doors off to the side of the school is just one big figure eight with a library in the middle.
When talking about the layout of the school, like I was just ripping on earlier.
Yeah.
So my high school was shaped like an H because it was the initials were TH, and so the buildings were built like a T and an H.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. So I
was it like a lowercase was one of your schools a cathedral and it was just a lowercase T with names?
No.
It's but just like, a crime.
So I'm familiar with like high schools that kind of like loop around on themselves a bit. Mm. But this one, it's like these two corridors and they both appear to have classrooms coming off them facing each other. So I guess just like a bunch of the classrooms are just these windowless chambers you just go sit in all day. There's no Welcome to math class. Hope you enjoy the fluorescent lights.
And just the echoing cement. You could hear everyone's pencil scratchings from every corner of the house. Or house, what? Classroom. This school is, it's totally fucked up. And that's not even the most fucked up thing about it. What's there are, on every wall, at least two billboard sections with a bunch of random ads.
Yeah, this game has one kind of puzzle, actually, kind
it's
of.
It's just one kind of puzzle, and it is look at the billboard, click the part that highlights it, decipher the random cipher that's there, and then also write down the others. There's like two ciphers in one, and then one of them is part of the meta cipher. It's like the worst version of Blueprints you've ever played in your life.
Which I will give them credit. There are like 10 of these billboards. There's a lot of them. All the fake sort of like notices and stuff, the posters for school events, the letters about like things happening, etc., those don't repeat as far as I can tell. They did write a bunch of fake material for like filling out the world of whatever's going on in this high school. And then also, you just like someone has pinned up on all of them weird like notes that are written backwards or little like, well, we're gonna get to the
yeah and
we're gonna like, get to the little letter clues, but
so the and our aunt just has done nothing about it. The librarian who is supposedly in charge of all the media and stuff is just like, nah, this is fine, whatever, because the person who put all these ciphers up is her her student aide, the victim Jake Rogers, who we're like, oh man, I can't believe a high school student got murdered. But then we talked to all the other students who were like, wow, no fucking wonder he got murdered.
Yeah.
This kid is an awful piece of shit, dude. He's racist. He's like assaulting people. He's just like harassing the one girl in the classroom. Relentless.
I will say, Jake seems racist. The game also seems kind of racist. I don't know about this Japanese character.
The Japanese character is a Japanese student, transfer student, I guess, or an immigrant. I think it's just an immigrant named Hal Tanaka. He took Hal as an English name to make life easier for himself over here. That's what he explained. I'm like, well, that's pretty typical. The accent that the voice actor does is like not over the top, I don't think. It's not like... it's not super Englishy, you know. It's not Austin Powers or whatever.
It's not. It's more just like
a little subdued.
Yeah, I shouldn't overstate it. It's not bad. It's maybe you might make some different creative choices in 2025.
Probably, but it's not even not bad for the time. It's just like it's not that bad. It's not. You're not gonna get. It's an Nancy Drew game. You're not gonna get the best Oscar winning performances of your life, but you are. You could get a lot worse, so I don't have an issue with Hal Tanaka's presentation at all. However, They do really, really hammer in on the, and again, maybe this is a well-informed plot decision. They do really, really hammer in that, like, his parents are putting a lot of pressure on him to succeed. And they, to, I think, though, to this character's credit, the questionable actions that he does are, well, they're not the worst. I was about to say, actually, let's see, they're probably middle of the road, right? He's actually done something wrong. All these kids have done something shitty, and then, like, I'm sorry if you don't want to get spoiled on the plot of this game, but
no,
we have to talk about this fucking plot because it's outrageous. All these kids have done something shitty, and we have to, like,
including the fourth one, the guy who works at the diner.
Yeah, the guy. Oh yeah, that's right. God. Oh, I hated him.
Knock off Matt Smith.
No eyebrows. Terrifying, and he just keeps being so gross to Nancy.
He's so chauvinistic to Nancy. It's like,
he's like the student council president, so he got voted in by the other three chuckle fucks. And he is, yeah, relentlessly hitting on Nancy. And this is like the first game that does it.
Hitting on her and being really patronizing to her.
Yeah, when she rebuffs him. Like as if he wasn't trying to, like, almost like borderline gaslighting. Not really. He didn't actually call her crazy, but he's like, whoa, I was just saying, you know. Anyway, he's really, really bad. Everyone's done something shitty, and the person that got killed was blackmailing them all for it.
Yes.
Basically, by,
is what we learned.
We learned that he set up this illicit, like, horrible surveillance cameras in everyone's lockers, like, proactively done this. Just
possibly making what he's done the worst of all.
Yeah.
Well,
he's just invaded all of their privacy.
Should we just go down a list of their crimes?
Yeah, their crimes. What? Well, I mean, you could figure out that the jocks took the steroids, right?
Well, but that's the thing.
Jock robbed the drugstore for steroids.
One of them is like, hey, someone stole steroids from the drugstore. That's pretty bad. The next one is
what's wild is that this game is so unsubtle about it's like anti like about like how often it talks about the steroids. You go in the library, there's a rack of magazines, and the only one you can click on is a pamphlet about the harmful side effects of anabolic steroids. And I was like, what? That's the info dump in this game? Secret of Shadow Ranch gave us horse breeds. We got to learn about flowers and sheep breeds in the other games, and this one's like, anabolic steroids will ruin, send you to atrophy.
To their credit, I think that's accurate to the kind of literature you might find in, say, a late 90s high school.
Probably a modern day high school. But yeah, that was one of the crimes. The other crime was...
Well, there's a Hal who cheats on an essay, copies it from a book.
He plagiarizes it.
Yeah, plagiarizes, which is not great. You know, pretty serious academic infringement.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, what's her name?
Connie.
Yeah. Her crime is that she's really good at martial arts.
Yeah.
And she dresses up as a boy to sneak into the boys' competition and win at it despite being a girl.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not as bad as stealing steroids from the drugstore. That's
not
kind of
close.
Not really the same thing.
Not at all. But here's to Nancy's credit, equal opportunist. Every time she learns about their crimes, she goes up to them and goes from 0 to 100 and says, hey, I know that you participated in the men's only judo tournament and that Jake was blackmailing you. And she's like, okay, yeah, I think it's bullshit that women can't compete. And she's like, so that's why you killed him. Connie's like, what? No.
Look,
and Nancy's just like, bye. See you later, Nancy.
We're testing out some theories.
The game just goes from 0 to 100 to 0, and everyone's totally cool. Everyone is totally grape orange cool. Oh my god. How many times did you have to set up the vending machine alarm to get Connie to go away?
Oh god, like at least 3, I think. It took me to figure out, like,
Connie does not. There's a system wherein you
the vending machine is alarmed.
The vending machine has been pre-built with this thing that sets off an alarm if somebody presses 4 buttons. I don't know what that could possibly serve. Like, I'm in danger. Let me run to this vending machine and hit grape orange cool. Like, what does that do? Like, I don't know.
It puts it like a factory reset mode, I guess. Whatever.
Not even a factory. It just like It's a like a tampering alarm. Like, I don't understand why there's an, it's literally like, it's just like blares throughout the gymnasium. It's so fucking funny.
The point
and
being
every
that, like,
time you go back, you have to go back to Connie and be like, somebody set off the alarm again. And she's like, oh, gosh, dang it.
And so you sneak into the teacher's lounge, which is where you learn. What do you learn in the teacher's lounge?
You learn a lot
things.
Of stuff. You learn about. That's where you learn about the break-in. You learn about two things. One is that you find the report about the drugs or whatever, and two, you find the schedule of the maintenance, and you learn about the no eyebrows kids soaping the windows, and having a meeting with Jake here as well, and the other thing. Like, there's a couple things, and then you get some other stuff off the computer. It's this, oh god, this the gameplay, as you said, skeleton is there, but the writing is like, it's not there, but in the best way. It's
very thin, which means that the bits that are there are very erratic and big.
And Nancy Drew has her typical airheadedness in this one and lack of tact, but it is so unrefined. There is, when you first meet Connie, she's explaining what happened and like why she's so busy. She says, you give her the prompt, what happened? And she says, one of the students was murdered in this school last week. And then Nancy Drew's response is, oh, what happened? Exactly. And then Connie's like, but why male models, you bitch? Like, Jesus Christ.
There's a bit early on where, right after you hear about them being murdered, Nancy's like, I'm going to call this the case Secrets Can Kill. And then, like, the jaunty music kicks in. And I was like, I don't think we're really matching the tone.
It's the theme music to Julia Child's The French Chef with the piccolo. Secrets Can Kill. There's a dead body in the locker. Like, I had a really good time playing it and finishing it, but it was so stupid. I definitely took the most notes on this game just because it was so obtuse. The major meta puzzle was that you were supposed to,
this fucking puzzle,
find all 17 of the disparate periodic table of elements. You just call them elements.
This is the most blueprinty
chemical
thing.
Elements, that's what they're called. Yeah, find chemical elements and then a corresponding directional move, and then you find this bespoke box with a bunch of random symbols on it, and that this weird cryptocurrency motherfucker who's dead now had taped under his desk at the library. And you have to put them in order and then do the directions, and then you get his diary or whatever the hell. You get another VHS that tells you where the diary is.
We're talking about the first VHS tape. The first one is just the surveillance footage. This second VHS tape is so great. The characterization on this kid.
You have to look this up. You got to watch all the cutscenes of Secrets Get Kill if you're not playing this game. It's so funny. He's such like a little brat, like, oh man, we can't even do it justice by mimicking it. But is there anything you want to cover main-wise before we get to the big finale?
Well, the big thing with the element puzzle is, so all these little like element puzzles are written around the school on like bulletin boards and stuff, and I'm like, okay, I guess Trake put them there. Oh, some of them are on like materials in the library. Wrote them there.
And they all have different ciphers on them.
And they're all different, yeah. And then you get to the one written on the inside of a book in your aunt's house. And I was like, how did this get here? Was Jake coming over to your aunt's house regularly? Did he scribble it in the margins? Like, it looks like it's printed in the same font. Why is this here?
Yeah, there's one like on one of the menus in Maxine's, and it just happens to be the one in the front. The big plot twist that's well foreshadowed, we'll say that much.
I want you to tell me what you think the actual plot of this crime is.
In the game, what's given to us is that Jake had some dirt on because the bald kid's dad is the owner of a big aerospace company. Not bald brow kid. Dad, big aerospace company owner, and he was selling company secrets for cash to get into college or whatever the hell. to the HVAC guy who, like,
who we never
way
meet
through the game, just like threatens you with caller ID. you can just call him back and be like, "What the hell was that?" It's so funny. And then, like, back when caller ID was brand new and people didn't know about it.
Oh yeah, that is one thing they updated for the remake, is Nancy's a cell phone now. In the original, you were using like little payphones all around the school.
That's so funny. So they probably didn't have the, like, you get to call them back with caller ID in the original.
Maybe you could, like, star 69 or whatever. Like,
But then she wouldn't know. I don't know. She could probably piece together who it was.
So Mitch, the HVAC guy.
They had a meeting with this guy, and he was trying to blackmail them, and then Mitch just, like, took the secrets and killed the kid, basically. And the other guy was, and the cop was in on it. And the
was
cop
buying
was part
the secrets.
Of it. Yeah, cop was also buying the secrets and keeping things down in a journal to sell or whatever the hell.
And so the final confrontation.
Oh, yeah. And then Jake stole the journal, and then. This is where I got lost, because I was like, why did you kill the one kid who would, like, know where your secrets are? And then I was like, huh, there's a weird plot hole there, but, like eventually someone's going to find it, because they were taped underneath a library cart. Like, as if the librarian wasn't going to find it next
eventually,
week.
Eventually, yeah.
Like, why did we... Oh my god.
Would it surprise you to learn that this is a bit that was largely rewritten for the remake?
Not one bit, because... Well, also, this... The way you trap the cop after he kind of heel turns on you in your house is the very same way.
Is the safe thing.
You drop the cage on him. Thing down, and like his gun is just gone. He was threatening you with a gun before.
Yeah, like, no, I know that. He's like, oh shit, this guy pulled a gun.
He could just shoot you, Nancy. Like, this is brutal.
Yeah, like you solve everything in your house, then he... appears in your aunt's house behind you, asks for where the book is, you tell him it's in the safe, he goes to the safe, he puts the wrong combination in three times at your direction, so the cage drops in, catches him, mystery solved,
doesn't shoot you through the giant cage bars. That would be whatever. Okay, please tell me what the original ending is.
Okay, so I will say, so the original, it, like, looks very similar to this. I think they might have, if they didn't just repurpose the old assets for most things, they certainly, like, didn't do very much to update them, with the exception of, I will show you, the 3D character models.
Okay, well, you have to put these on the Discord this time, because this is a visual gag.
Yes. The original character models were actually kind of, like, illustrated. Yeah, no, right?
He just showed me Hal Tanaka, and Hal's mouth was just open in the weirdest, like, hook-jawed way.
They're actually quite well animated. They have a good amount of personality to them.
There you go. He has eyebrows in that one.
Yeah.
That's the diner kid.
But, here we go. He looks a lot like...
Sure.
Oh, the actor who played Reggie on Riverdale, who then went on to be really good in,
I don't know.
That movie with the thing.
Zachary Quinto.
May December. The actor who was really good in May December. Anyway.
Okay. Please don't knock my speakers over.
Mostly the same. As far as I could tell, a lot of the puzzles were the same. A lot of the clues you're learning are the same. The secrets behind each of the kids are all the same. Except, here is what is actually going on. It is not about selling secrets from the aerospace company. It is about drug running.
Okay.
And in particular, it is that Mitch the janitor is having Daryl, the guy from the janitor? Or the HVAC guy or whatever.
Right? Oh, is he like the janitor of the school in the game? Because like the HVAC guy is never seen, though he does trap us in a fire room.
He shows up briefly towards the end of this because the reveal is that he was basically kind of strong-arming Daryl into being kind of like a gopher for drugs, like picking up packages and dropping them off. Because there's a fourth location you can kind of but not really visit in the game, which is the town pharmaceutical company.
Oh.
And the end of the game is you basically talk Connie into coming with you to go confront Mitch at the pharmaceutical company, where Mitch is beating the shit out of Daryl. Just like they're getting like a physical altercation, and he is like this kid is in rough shape. Connie comes in and does a flying drop
Judo
kick on him.
Flying crane kick, hell yes.
Just a flying crane kick. And then this is the thing. The puzzles are mostly the same, but I guess there are some items you can pick up differently. Because I watched this YouTube video, this Let's Play, as the player scrolled down their inventory, selected the handgun that they had picked up.
What?
Selected Mitch and said, "Hands up, you're caught." That's the end of the game. So I think this might have been taken off the market.
Holy shit.
Because they don't...
Dude, imagine if they kept going with that, Nancy Drew.
I know, right?
Oh, where my Nancy God.
Threatens people with gun violence. I don't think they could have kept, like, the E for everyone rating.
Oh, my God, no. That would have absolutely ruled, though.
That's... Yeah, it was great. And I was like, oh, okay, I understand now.
I see why they maybe redid some things. Oh, my gosh. But otherwise, as far as quality of Nancy Drew games goes, like, this was still pretty good.
It's still pretty fun. It's very thin. It's noticeably thinner than the other ones.
But it's also just so unhinged.
Yeah. For the sheer, like, what is going on factor, this one's pretty up there.
Just the drugs and guns going on and getting, yeah, the burning, the funny deaths that are everywhere. Oh, my gosh. So good. So good. Anyway, Secrets Can Kill is a great starting point for the Nancy Drew franchise, and we can't wait to keep going with more Nancy Drew. But for now, we've got our pre-planned ad to read, and we've got our, I believe, side quest segment. This is our...
Yeah,
this is what we're doing. That's what we're doing today. Huh, a regular segment. Bye. This episode of Light Gaming is brought to you by SMF.
SMF?
That's right. It's Saturday Maternal Flower Club.
The Saturday Maternal Flower Club.
Yeah, that's right. The Saturday Maternal Flower Club is
I've heard of them.
They're having a meeting near you in the Shaanxi province of China. In the Shaanxi province of China. That's like the one that's really far away.
That's pretty near me. That's like...
Yeah, that's pretty near us.
It's like 16 hours of travel, give or take.
Yeah, absolutely. So go on, get yourself a plane, and then get yourself a car, and then get yourself a yak, and then get yourself a Sherpa, and then get yourself another yak, and take yourself to the Saturday Morning Flower Club, where you can discuss all manner of asters, lilies, Venus flytraps, daffodils.
I like all of these.
Dandelions, flying bee catchers.
Flying bee catchers, yeah.
Slappy Sallys. The W plant.
I love the W plant. After that guy buried all that money.
Yeah. And you can also sign up your best friend's wife free if you bring her along to the Shaanxi province in China. I hope I'm saying that right, but, you know, they give me a little pronunciation guide here, but, like, I just didn't grow up hearing Chinese.
Yeah, wait, so this isn't, like, geo-targeted, right? Like, we're supposed to be delivering this?
We're supposed to be delivering this.
Okay.
So if you are, you know, relatively on the planet, you might be able to make it to this. It is going to be happening this upcoming Saturday.
Okay, cool.
July 26th. 2025. So drop all your plans and make it to the Saturday Morning Flowers Club. It's at 9:30 Chinese time.
No, that's right. They only have one time zone.
They only have one time zone? Great. Yeah. But you do have to bring not only your best friend's wife, you also have to bring a flower of your choosing to share with the Saturday Morning Flower Club. Tell us, what flower are you going to bring to the Saturday Morning Flower Club?
I'm going to bring one of those big, like, tropical ones that smell like a corpse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like 4 feet around?
Mm-hmm. Those are fantastic.
The ones, like, they base vial plume off of?
They're extremely declarable through customs as well.
I mean, okay, sure, technically, but, like, there's two lanes. One that says declare, yeah, and one that says nothing to declare. And you could just walk through the one that says nothing to declare and nobody stops you.
They will never detect anything on your presence if you bring a corpse flower through the nothing to declare aisle.
That's this big round barrel I'm bringing with me.
There are no rules against bringing invasive species to there. And surely northern China will not get invaded by a corpse flower. those bloom only once every 4 years. What a great addition to the Saturday Morning Flower Club.
I think it's pretty safe.
I think it's extremely safe. I'm going to bring... Well, they've already got a W plant. So I'm going to bring... The Hookshot! It's the plant that they based the hookshot off of in Legend of Zelda.
Oh, yeah, no shit?
Yeah, that's... So you could take it, and it'll, like... I bring that because it's going to save me a lot of time up the mountain climb.
Have you ever thought about how terrifying the hookshot must be to actually use?
It's not a... rip out your shoulder blades.
It's not a grappling hook. It just launches you at the wall.
It just pulls you by the shoulder blades. Imagine the double hookshot from Twilight Princess. Oh, I don't have a double hookshot plant, though, so I can't do that.
Yeah, no, those are much rarer right now. Like, one in, like, every 5,000 germinates into a double hookshot.
There was a similar grappling hook in Agent Under Fire that was also pretty fun. And that's, like, the only fun thing about Agent Under Fire. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Saturday Morning Flower Club. That's true. And they have another special promotion going on. Tell us about their other special promotion.
Sure. If you show up to the 9:30 event and you bring with you a collection of native seeds from the area that you live in, they're going to mix them all up in a big vat and then send everyone home with a scoop from that vat of other native plants from all over the world.
Wonderful.
Planted in your backyard.
I'm going to bring the mustard that's growing everywhere here.
I'm going to bring zucchini.
Oh my goodness, we'll have zucchini and mustard and probably something else, because all of you guys are going to show up there to the Saturday Morning Flower Club, right?
Yeah, it's going to be the first official light gaming meetup.
Absolutely, in the Xianjing province of China.
Now, I will say, with 5 days to go, you're going to need to get an expedited visa processed. You can do that on the website. You've got to go to, like, basically to the Chinese embassy. We can write you a letter of reference. I think as a visa holder, I'm allowed to write other people letters of reference.
I'm being told it's Xinjiang, not Xianjing.
Xinjiang? That sounds more right. Now, if you get there tomorrow, I think it'll be like $350 for the expedited process.
Ooh.
But that might get you the visa in time to book your flight for Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. And if you sign up now, they'll give you a free Tibet. Saturday Morning Flower Club. Free Tibet!
Well, if we had any Chinese listeners, I don't know about now.
Well, we're back. We checked our demographics. Let me tell you, we're good. We barely have any listeners, much less any Chinese ones. Let's keep going with our regularly scheduled side quest segment. How about you go first? Because your name starts with A.
It does. I took a literal side quest over the last week.
Yeah, you sure did.
I physically transported myself to the Washington State area for a bunch of sort of just hiking and spending time around Mount Rainier National Park.
Oh my gosh. Sounds like it has wonderful, wonderful views. Did you take any photos?
I took a bunch of photos. Here's the thing. It mostly did not have wonderful views because we got there Wednesday evening and we saw a beautiful sunset. Great, loved it. We drove all the way up to the mountain and saw a beautiful sunset. Thursday and Friday, the 2 days that we were primarily there to hike and see our way around the park, a big old cloud just kind of moved in and parked itself on top of the mountain.
Hell yeah.
Which is tall enough that it pokes into the cloud. And so just we would drive up and be like, can we see anything? No, not really. You look out over this bluff and it's just a wall of white fog extending outwards.
It's like my old apartment.
Basically. So we did some hiking and stuff, but like we ended up having to spend extra time Friday morning just because, yeah, couldn't see shit. But it was a very beautiful national park, another one that we checked up off our list. And then we swung by Mount St. Helens on our way south to Portland.
That's the one that exploded, right?
Yes, it did. And it's as part of our volcanic expedition, we hiked through Ape Caves. Ape Caves are a small state park located on the south of Mount St. Helens. It is a set of underground lava tubes from a long time ago, cooled lava tubes, very long time ago, that are just these massive, smooth, river-like caverns underground that you can walk through for about a good 3/4 mile or so.
Oh,
and then walk back out. And it's like all this, like, it's beautiful kind of, you can see the way that it shrinks and grows and changes shape and stuff. You can really feel like the rock was a fluid at one point that was moving at a very, in a very molten manner before it eventually solidified.
Were you able to tap it for red mana?
I was not able to tap it for red mana. In fact, you're not supposed to tap it at all. The walls of the cave support a nutritious slime that is important for the local ecosystem, and you should not disturb it.
Ick. Yeah, I don't want to disturb it.
You have to bring your own flashlights in. There were these teenagers ahead of us. One of them had brought like a Yankee candle as his light source.
That's incredible.
It's very, fairly strongly scented. Yeah, no.
I love a resourceful teen.
They were kind of like shitposting, but hiking through a cave. I think they were.
Oh, to be a teen in the Pacific Northwest.
Exactly.
That sounds ideal.
They had the right attitude. There's a bit at the very end when you reach the end of the tube where like it gets super narrow and it goes down to like only about 2 feet tall and goes on for like another like 50 or 100 feet or so. And my fiance, who was not a cave person, who was indulging me by even coming this far, was like, you go check that out. I'm not going anywhere near that. I got down and kind of squatted under this shelf and started going a bit forward, and I found this woman who appeared not upset exactly, but her two like 6-year-old children had gone even further ahead into the very narrow little bit of this cave because they were children and could really easily fit into this tiny squishy little bit at the very end here. And she was just like, yeah, I said they could go check it out, but I wish they would come back. And I was like, I don't know when those kids are coming back. Like, I don't remember how much further this goes, but they're very small and can probably go quite a ways longer. Anyway, then we left the cave, went to Portland, had some fun time picking fruit, went to Cannon Beach, saw a bunch of really cool birds. It was a good time in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh my God, that sounds absolutely fantastic. My side quest is a lot less mobile, but a kind of a checklist item nonetheless. I have found myself in a weirdly familiar gaming space in that I, in the summer sale, not only did I pick up our itinerary games for the next couple of months, I picked up the Ultimate Seekers edition of Final Fantasy XI.
Yes, you mentioned this.
The precursor to Final Fantasy XIV in a lot of ways. Let me tell you, there's a lot of bones here. There's a lot of 14's bones are in 11. As somebody who's never played this game before and went straight from 10 to 12, there always has been kind of something missing in the gap. And I never got a chance to play it. I did not have enough financial independence to be able to afford a PS2 online monthly subscription to play online gaming. Also, the Dreamcast was out at the time, and I was playing Phantasy Star Online instead, which I will say is kind of like our usual phrase, pound for pound, kind of a better game.
I would say, based on my memory, my only experience with Final Fantasy XI, I was staying over at my friend's house, my friend who had all the consoles, because I did not have consoles or much growing up. I had a PC and like a Game Boy, and I played a bit of Final Fantasy VII on his PS2 before. He had Final Fantasy XI with the internet subscription, maybe as part of Game Spy or something. Point being that, like, I remember rolling up basically a Lalafell character or whatever the equivalent is.
Taro, that's what Taro, I am. Yep. Too.
And I remember being like 13 years old and just running around a field for like an hour and a half, kind of like fighting early mobs. And then I was like, I don't get this and I'm not having fun. And I never asked to play it again.
Yeah, that's part of kind of the old version of this game where there was a lot of... I mean, it's... How do I describe this? Everyone who's an old head of this game will say they probably dumbed everything down, but that is probably only true for them. They do give you a lot of experience boosts that are pretty effectively permanent. Just some items that you have to reuse once every, like, 5 hours to give yourself, like, a 1,500% experience boost or whatever the hell. They also give you party members that you can summon. They're called trusts, and then they reappear in 14 as kind of a reference. Like, on a lot of the monsters and skeletons and the character emotes and just the way people sort of interact and behave is reminiscent of 14. Like, 14 is obviously meant to be kind of like an 11 too, as it were. It would have been interesting if 11 and 14 just weren't mainline, but whatever. Anyway, this game has... The big cardinal sin that this game commits is that it was so accessible for PS2, but it tried to be a PC game, and it's as such, it kept all of its menus, interfaces, and all of its complexities at the same time.
I remember this.
So you have to navigate through the menus or create macros for each one of your buttons or whatever, and use the key, you use mouse and keyboard, the keyboard to just end up doing that. It's usually worth it. The macro language is the same language you use in the crafting automation, basically, for Final Fantasy 14, or I guess macro automation in Final Fantasy 14 as well. So that DNA is there. If you're familiar with that, you'll get a hang of macros in 11 on top of it. That being said, like, it is a total vibe. It's just a total vibe to explore this kind of grainy PS2 era, like, rough, mostly untextured sandbox of a game where everything just looks like sand.
Yeah, that it was a brown field. I was running around
everything,
in a brown field for like an
hour. Everything in this game is really brown. Like, you think... There was another game where, like, one of the complaints was that everything was too brown recently. It was like a remastered game. What was it? I don't remember, but this game has that in spades.
Womp womp, it's Oblivion, which tracks.
Womp womp, it's got brown in spades. That being said, I'm like, I'm still captivated by it because it is such a relic. Graphically, I would say it's like less, it's a lot less pretty than 10 was because it had to be online. And it kind of gameplay-wise does feel a little bit like a bridge between 10 and 12. 12 has the Gambit automation system as well, where you pre-program your party members and they kind of automatically hit things at the same time as you guys. And then there's like conditions you set off for them to do that. It's not really that here. Like, every one of the trust NPCs has their own set of conditions that they'll do, and then they'll just be fixed. And you can create your own party based off what you're doing. I'm doing right now, I mean, my plan is to go Geomancer. Geomancer is probably my favorite Final Fantasy job ever.
Geomancer sounds fun.
It's like a support job, but to do that you have to kind of like, I mean, it has a similar vibe to 14, like prior 14 games or 14 expansions, where you would like, you get some traits from other jobs and then you use them as a sub job for your main job, kind of. I don't know. So it's like a mix between Final Fantasy 14, where you can switch jobs at any time, and like Final Fantasy Tactics, where you have a primary and a sub job.
Well, so how does the multiplayer of this actually work? Are you doing dungeons? Are you doing raids?
The dungeons are basically just like Shin Megami Tensei-esque sort of like uninteresting mazes that are, but anyone can, they're not instanced at all. Everything is like, it's like all like,
oh, interesting.
It's like, it's not like a big World of Warcraft open world.
I guess none of the dungeons 2002, are like, right. This is pre World of Warcraft, which is like,
so it's
the
like
big innovation.
The dungeon
Warcraft
is its own zone.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it plays like Final Fantasy 14, where it has its like big sandbox things that are not connected. And then the dungeons, however, are also not instanced. So it's just like, yeah, everything is competitive. I'm on a smaller server, so I don't have to worry about that much, really. I'm just trying to get through and like experience the game, experience what story I can. I don't know if I want to like get through to the entire end game, and I want to like see where 14 pulled from for things like Eureka and just its base game. And it's like a lot. It's a lot of it. So it's an enjoyable experience. I'm leveling up Red Mage right now to 50 for it to be my sub job, because every like 99% of like the, like it's, this game is solved. So if you're a Geomancer, your sub job is Red Mage, so you can cast some stuff faster. Red Mage is different in this game. It has, it's kind of more like an, like it has white and actual white and black magic, and then you can also imbue your weapon with an element to do additional damage that way, and that's pretty much it. Right, you're not getting, it's not a 2-minute rotation.
Oh yeah, sure, of course not. No,
but
like,
yeah, what's interesting, what like the job abilities all have like super omega long, not all of them, but like many of them have long cooldowns, some of which last are 2-hour cooldowns.
you will like use your 2 hour cooldown on a big boss and then not be able to attempt it again for another 2 hours if you fuck up.
I'm not going to say that this is better than modern MMO design.
No.
I am saying I would love to see someone try and actually do a modern spin on this and like go back to sort of like break away a little bit from the mold that a lot of things have kind of like congregated at.
And this game does a really good job of making you really want to disconnect at every given point. Like everything is just so but thankfully the community is what keeps you in, because like I'm literally just like following this guide on the 11 wiki that says how to level up a new player, and it will tell you like when to do the main story missions and then when to go out and do some quality of life stuff and then when to start like I just unlocked the island sanctuary basically that was already. Oh, the housing is better though. That's like the one thing this game does better. Everyone has an instance house.
Oh,
there's no housing market.
Funny, houses are instance, jobs, dungeons are not.
Yeah. And you get extra storage there and stuff. Inventory management's a nightmare in this game. You only get like 30 inventory spots and then you have to buy a bunch of shit off the auction house or be cool enough to make. I have not touched crafting at all. Anyway, that's how I'm getting along. I'm around level 30 or so. And
how present is the story? Like,
the story is, it's closer to World of Warcraft mm-hmm. than it is to Final Fantasy 14, but not so yeah. Plus that there isn't a chain of events that happens or that you blaze through and then chains like without your consent will just start like popping off all the different directions because you level up too fast. You can manage the storylines, but the best way to play through the game for your own sanity is to like start different storylines at different times and get their unlocks and then go back and do other stuff. So like everything is kind of, as a new player, everything is a little bit nebulous still, even at level 30. I mean, I've done like, I started in Sandoria, which is like the elven town, even though I'm a Tarotaro, because it just had the most terribly infectious music. God, this song sucks. I'm obsessed with it. It's like got these slightly out of tune bagpipes that play over and over again. I fucking love Sandoria. It's horrible. Anyway, like that kind of, honestly, that describes my feelings about this game in general. Like this game kind of sucks and I'm obsessed with it. So that's basically what, but yeah, the story is like, there's some, I know that the Raid and Dawn Trail is based off of like the Echoes of Vanadil or something like that. So I kind of at least want to do that. But I mean, I really, this is going to take months for me to like process. So I'll maybe update you guys at the end of the year, where the hell I'm at or whatever the hell I'm doing. But that's the start of my Final Fantasy XI journey. I want to get to Geomancer. You can do whatever you want because the trust system, you just like have your own party. And then like for anything that's probably really hard, I bet you could find a party in the chat to help you guys out or just use Discord or something. Like Discord exists now, so this is all probably a lot easier.
God, yeah, you're not using like Akamai or whatever.
Remember MIRC? I used MIRC a lot.
Oh yeah,
dude, that was the best one.
I think IRC should come back. I think that it was better than a lot of other platforms.
Let's start the Light Gaming IRC channel.
Honestly, yeah.
No. Oh my god. Anyway, yeah, we'll get some quotes logged on bash.org.
That sounds fun. I could not follow you down this road, but no. I'm glad you're doing
this. That's actually not bash.org. If you haven't read that in a while, that shit's problematic. Mm-hmm. That has not aged super well. But that's basically the conclusion of my side quest. I hope I answered all your questions. I know I went on a tangent during a couple, but I tried to circle back.
That was super informative. I now don't feel like I need to play this game.
It's what really compelled me to it is that it's like an impossible game to watch because it's so, everything is so like disparate and spread out and esoteric. I was like, oh, this isn't something I have to get in here to finish the series. I have to do this.
But you can't really like stream it. Like it's hard to make entertaining.
No, I'd be fine to make it entertaining. You just talk about anything else while you're playing Final Fantasy. Like you just chill. You just put on music. But like I don't have the bandwidth to stream at this fucking place, so I can't do that. Otherwise, it would be the perfect stream game because it's just like I don't have to think about anything. I'm just like, what the hell am I doing? And then someone will like help, probably. They'll be like, a chatter would be so helpful.
In that way that like with really old games like that, where it's like everyone who is still hanging around is just so happy to see any new player. They're just like, yeah, hey, wow, great to have you in here. Totally. Can I show you how stuff works? Do you need any help?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that'd be fun. But unless I still have issues just staying connected to the game itself. Sadly, I get booted off because my internet sucks. So, but I'm not doing group content yet, so it doesn't really matter at this point. Hopefully when my new ISP comes in later this year, that will be a little bit better. I'm not gonna hope for it to be fixed completely. I'm just not gonna, because
that's crazy. I didn't realize your internet was that bad here.
It's really bad, yeah. But we can still record shit and then upload it. That's fine. And that's what we have done on this episode of Light Gaming. Thank you all so much for having listened to us this week. Next week, we're talking Pyre!
Oh, yeah.
We're doing Pyre. We're doing Supergiant's pre-Hades, kind of overlooked game.
Yeah, like post-Transistor, pre-Hades. It's the one I see discussed the least.
It definitely is. As far as I understand, it's a bit of a genre-bending game, so I'm excited to see what it gets into.
Yeah, it's like a visual novel with basketball.
It's like a sports game. It's so weird. Very, very much looking forward to that. And then I think the only thing I have to let you guys know about is our cool, cool Discord and social media, where, you know, we're going to post out of context. You have things you got to post in there. You didn't post the Batman, whatever the hell that was.
I didn't. Nope. I did post that on our social media.
Okay, that's on social media. Okay, cool, 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 cool. That's good. That's good enough. We have Blue Sky and Instagram and YouTube and stuff for stuff. You're probably going to see cool pictures of Mount Rainier if you join our Discord.
Yeah, I can drop a few of those in there.
And if you need to let us know about anything like the article, like any other pertinent news to games we're playing, please, please share it with us. It's fun, and it's fun to talk about. So we'd love to see you there, and we'd love to see you next week on Light Gaming. But until then, I have been your host of Light Gaming, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by my co-host of Light Gaming, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodnight to the gamers of Light.
Good evening.